Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's good, Internet? It is Monday, January 29th. I've written down here January 22nd, which is wrong, and I'm glad I found it. I found it in my heart of hearts. I knew what day it really was. It's the 29th. You are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 130. I am Austin Walker. Joining me today, Patrick Klepek.
Hello.
Rob Zachney.
Hey, everybody.
We are here to talk about monsters, the ones that we hunt and the ones that hunt us. Those are the ones. And I don't just mean Monster Hunter. Also zombies. Zombies are like monsters that hunt us. Because those are the games we've been playing. We've been playing Monster Hunter. We've been playing They Are Billions. I guess, Rob, you probably put a little bit more into Darkest Dungeon also.
A little bit, yeah.
Awesome. That's also monsters in that. How do we feel about monsters? Just generally? Just generally.
Like, I'm pro-monster movies. I'm pro... monsters like Cloverfield and Godzilla. I'm pro monster.
Would you ever want to be a monster?
Well, the question is, like, monsters are often portrayed as, like, not fully, like, what's the intellectual capacity of the monster?
It depends on the monster, right? I think it's a full range. It's like a full range of being, right? Because, like, you have monsters who are kind of mindless, like zombies, who are just like, oh, they're coming for you. Get out of the way. They're just going to eat your brain. That's all they can do is eat and consume. But there's, like, Godzilla movies where Godzilla is very clearly protecting the children. I guess Gamera protects the children, to be clear. but, like, you know what I mean, right? Or like werewolves, even inside of the one classification of monster that is werewolf, you have a range from underworld style, very conscious, very like, I'm aware of the world, we have a politics, we have rivalries, or like Twilight style, same thing, werewolves who are like of mind, and then you have werewolves that are just like basically like wild, hungry, ravenous beasts. Yeah, exactly.
What's the intellectual capacity? Like, because I would like to be a kaiju. Okay. I want to go full scale. Like, Godzilla doesn't seem like he's got stuff going on.
Yeah, I've checked Google. I've Googled how smart is Godzilla. and not only are there debates about how smart Godzilla is, there are debates about how smart Godzilla should be. So that's interesting. This one, I'm on a forum here, a Godzilla forum.
Please.
I'm just not going to read these. I'm not going to read anything from here, but I am going to say that these are the names of the people on this Godzilla forum. King Godzilla 24/7. Thrillerzilla, Doggyzilla, Godzilla dot himself. That's good. That's a good one. Godzilla himself is here. Kaiju critic with a K.
Nice.
That's a good one. Oh, that's legitimately a good username.
And also, Kaiju critic has a really good answer. The question here is, how intelligent should Godzilla be?
I'm loading up this thread right now too.
Kaiju critic says, I've totally got the answer. The raptors from Jurassic Park. Good answer. Like,
that's
very
good.
Specific. Yeah. Love it. Love it. This person says, not smart like King Kong and not a mindless brute. And it's interesting that they're like, King Kong, now that's a smart one.
I mean, but King Kong shows, like,
right,
has empathy. But so does Godzilla. Like, so does Godzilla fights, like, yes, he tromps through and kills presumably billions by marching through these cities. But, like, in the arc of the Godzilla films, he shows empathy and protectionism of both Earth, when we get aliens involved, as the series goes
true.
On.
Yes.
But in the near term, for humanity. Mm-hmm. Despite the fact, well, I guess maybe he owes a debt to humanity. Like, he doesn't exist without humanity.
Right. We all have to confront our parents at some point. It's true.
Godzilla, you're welcome.
There's no, but like every monster is contextual. Like every mm-hmm. monster is a reflection of some anxiety or some aspect of society. So the question is, like, the intelligence is kind of relevant to how does the monster comprehend the circumstances of its creation.
Totally. I think that this is a really fascinating debate. Or not even debate, but like question, because it reveals a lot about what we want from these various monster stories, right? Like Akio123 over here on the Godzilla-movies.com forum was like, you know, he shouldn't be able, Godzilla can't recognize a human's face. He too damn big. And tries to say that Godzilla is like a hurricane or a tornado, a force of nature. But then this other poster is saying like, well, I really like it when Godzilla solves problems and thinks like, oh, I'm going to try to use my tail in this certain way. How I'm going to use these electrical like poles and like things like that do suggest a degree of problem solving and intelligence. And then for this other poster, like they're coming to Godzilla for that stuff more than the sort of like Lincoln Clay style force of nature story. You know, I really like thinking about what we get from monster stories. And I think maybe this is a good way to talk about Monster Hunter, because I think that that's a game that I really like a lot. And also I'm very conflicted about like which fantasy it's giving me or like. It's very conflicted about it in a weird way, in a way that I think works, maybe, but...
Well, can I just ask a question right at the start here?
Yeah.
Are they actually monsters?
There's a range, I think.
But, like, I mean, if we're talking about, like, the monster itself is a malevolent being that in some way, or a potentially malevolent being...
Yeah.
That enters into our life... Mm-hmm. And fucks things up in a way that is a form of like poetic justice.
So no.
You're saying like the monster has agency, like it is choosing to be a threat as opposed to maybe its natural response or like a response to a threat. Hmm.
I read it as like effect based, Rob.
Mm.
That like it might not choose to be part of our lives, but it enters into our lives maybe by circumstance and derails a course that we were on. Is okay. this what you're saying, Rob? I'm asking for clarification.
Yeah, no, that's it to a point. I think the other thing I would add, though, is like as an example, Smaug is a monster,
uh-huh.
right?
Well, like, is it? I guess so.
He knowingly, like he's a knowingly sadistic and violent creature.
Mm-hmm.
There is intent and understanding behind everything that Smaug the dragon does.
Right.
But a dragon itself is not necessarily a monster, right? A dragon is just a mythological being that has no... Like, it's an animal.
Do you think Smaug becomes a monster once it descends on the village and begins destroying things? Yeah. All right, so then I'm of a number of minds here with Monster Hunter. No, they are not monsters, because in Monster Hunter World specifically, not in the Monster Hunter series broadly, but in World specifically, you are following these creatures to the new world where you are setting up a base and trying to research them and hunt them and kill them. And there are numerous points at which you could be like, there are numerous points where they're like, should we leave? And the answer is like, no, no, we shouldn't. Where, like, there are moments where it's like, this thing is going to make it really hard for us to stay, and your response is, then we better stop it so that we can stay. And in that way, I think I'm going to put this one out there. We might be the real monsters.
Don't pretend the game is, like, doing a sneaky commentary on
no,
that.
No, like, it tries to do
every
some...
time it weirdly, and I think inappropriately, tries to step into... a conversation that it's not actually prepared to like fully
to
embrace,
nail.
Think through.
Yeah.
Like for better or worse, right? Like even if it comes down and like, hey, like you should feel like there's a world where like this game says like, hey, you should feel kind of uncomfortable with what you're doing, but also like you need that fang to build
armor. That sword. Yeah.
And I guess actually that's sort of like where the wishy-washy version is kind of where it lands, like without getting into like specifics of like where the story goes, but there's a specific beat that happened over the weekend that I sent you a message about being like, fucking what?
Yeah.
Like a certain twist that happens is that in the broadest terms is like, you go to a location and you discover the reason this location exists.
Well, if they said that, like, this place is corrupt and it's evil, what could the secret be of this place? And like, the twist is like, oh, it's fine. Like, basically it's like, oh, this place is totally natural, actually.
Yeah, but like keep probably go take that sword and stab it into an animal.
But that's That sounds like a subtle commentary, though, right? Like, that sounds...
Yeah.
Like, the text of the game is, like, we come in believing we have an understanding of the world, and that we
right,
view
but
this
then the next mission you get, Rob, is go kill the two kings of these two various areas, the two highest places on the chain, so that you can prove to this other person that you are the top of the food chain, motherfucker, and then they'll tell you how to get the next thing you need in your quest. And so, like, it swings between those two very rapidly.
Are the things that has you kill assholes?
No.
I mean,
yes.
They're,
I mean, what do
they're
you mean?
Mean.
Like,
there's some mean dragons.
There are some mean fucking dragons, but they're not mean in that they're... This is the thing, is like, do you imagine a world in which a dragon that kills a smaller dragon, or imagine that there is a dragon and a T-Rex and, like, a big iguana. Is it fine for that dragon to kill the T-Rex and for the T-Rex to kill the big iguana? I think it's fine. I'm not here to, like, say that we need to disturb that system.
Right. I would agree.
Okay, so that's one big one. Another big one would be like, okay, well, so I mean, like, these are the questions that I think the game could be asking and, like, does open up for us through the system of play, which is like, are hurricanes evil? Are imagine there's a natural habitat that gets flooded and destroyed. Is that a thing that we should stop, or is that also not with people in it? Like, let's just say that there is an island that's filled with biodiversity, and a volcano goes off and destroys it. Is that a thing that we should be concerned about stopping, or is that just also part of nature, just at a scale that is so hard for us to comprehend that it makes us feel like we should stop it?
Or, like, even in the context of the game, there are certain characters you'll run into who have chosen to live in this place and
right.
sort of become, in some way, like, either through choice or abandonment, like
right.
their vehicle. Like, at the point that you've come to this place, been abandoned, you have no reasonable way out, at that point, are you now just a participant in the ecosystem, even though you've come from the outside, and are not necessarily evil for just trying to survive?
Survive,
so I think
right,
that's the
right.
difference, right? Like,
yeah.
like often what you're doing in the game, especially in the non-mission structure, is not surviving. You are invading a habitat in order to slaughter these creatures for who again, like, they don't even aggro you. Like, the game is very specific about, like, how aggression
yeah,
and,
totally.
And fights begin, which is not, like, if it was the case that you were coming into an area and they were immediately aggressive on sight, they had something against humans, maybe you would feel less like you were the shitty aggressor here. But with the way Monster Hunter World works is that you come into an area, you could be walking around a fucking T-Rex, and the T-Rex does not give a shit that you are there. Why? Because it's a T-Rex.
Because it's a T-Rex.
And then
right.
you, the asshole, climb up a vine and then do a spinning barrel roll off of the ledge.
Which is
looking
sick,
very
to be clear.
Cool. And you have charged up your weapon with R2 to make it even stronger. And then you bash its face in, knocking it out, and then slowly try and break its heels so you can get, like, some of its claws that you might be able to use for, like, a badass shield. And, like, that moment always feels, that combined with the way the animals, and you wrote about this in your review, Austin,
right.
they animate when they are on sort of like their last bit of life, when they are just clinging to the last hopes of sticking around. They begin to try and find somewhere to sleep to regain energy.
Oh my God.
They limp along in
yeah.
a really sad, like, it's not, it's like the way they convey, like, end of life for these creatures before you give the killing blow, like, I guess when you say, like, maybe it is actually talking about this, like, it's hard to tell, like, in the like technically gorgeous animations that they have created for these creatures, especially when they reach sort of like their end of life moment, like, is what they're doing actually trying to generate empathy from the player, or did they just do a really good job of showing that this animal is weak and near death?
It's the thing that there's two things there. One is, like, part of the reason it works so well is the majesty and power of these creatures is so overwhelming when you first meet
right.
them. They're flying all over the place and leaping in ways that you can't even imagine and are surprising. And they do incredible things. Like, we fought on the stream today. We streamed today over on our Twitch. There was a fight against a kind of a big spiny creature where throughout the fight, like a subway train sized thing that's, like, charging. It's almost like an armadillo. It would roll up into a ball and then, like, charge at us with these big bony spikes. And throughout the fight, we would break the spines off. And then in its final, like, act of defiance, it dug deep into this giant, like, muddy, gross bone pile and popped back out, recovered in its spines that we'd broken off, because it was revealing that it has this kind of, like, oil-like textured body. It was embedding the bones and spines of other creatures into it. and rocks and stuff. Awesome. As it's so good. But then like you break that off and you cut off its tail and you can see the like the bisected tail meat. It's gross and it's limping away and it's like, okay, the entire range of creature action is so compelling that by the time they're limping away and it's rendered, like Patrick said, with such you know similarity to seeing something sick and weak and dying, that it can feel bad. But then you like kill it and then you pick up the next quest. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You don't. The loop continues. There is no like off button there. There is no branching path, and there is no like I guess you could theoretically try to capture the monsters. Apparently, if you
capture,
but
that still gets you parts.
It still gets you parts.
So presumably they capture it, take it back, study it, and in the process of studying it,
someone showed me a picture yesterday of the monster back in your base. If you've captured it, there is a place it goes that you can go see it. And then it's only that one time you get to see it. And so the theory is like, well, maybe you're just getting the scales and the horns, and they're just cutting those off and then letting it go back. But
oh, yeah,
that's
totally fine.
That sounds bad to me, one. Two, like, no, come on. Be honest with yourself. And it's okay to be honest with yourself that sucks. But then the other thing there I do want to say is that so one is like that loop is the thing that keeps you going. And like the notion of like, oh, I'm going to play this for 80 hours means I'm going to kill a ton of fucking monsters. But the other thing there too is that in the process of like hunting them and getting close to them, there is this feeling of like mastery, and there is another frame they could have used in which that mastery does feel like survival. And I say that because past games in the series have done that. It has been about like, oh, there is a plague that has infected these monsters, and like a lot of the creatures are totally normal, but the ones who've been infected are the ones who are a danger to the ecosystem. And so it's your job as like a hunter and slash like ranger to kind of bring that balance back.
Well, and that's wildlife management.
Which is a different thing, right? Like, yeah. I think that there is, if I lived in Wyoming, I would probably own a gun because I'd be afraid of bears, or whatever. Like, not if I was living in a city in Wyoming, obviously, but if I was a park, if I was living in, like, a big natural habitat, I do understand why someone would want to have a hunting rifle or something. And I understand that hunting has a huge history inside of lots of communities and lots of cultures. That are not just like colonialist culture. Like there is a reason to hunt in culture. It has a history that I think is worth thinking about. And that past Monster Hunter games have actually engaged with. A fan of ours, a follower of ours, Chef Lubu on Twitter, mentioned that there was a manga, a Monster Hunter manga for a long time, that super emphasized the sort of research and study component of the setting, and like being kind of ecologists and scientists, zoologists, and kind of like studying the habitats and being researchers. And that sounds super cool, and you do a little bit of that in the game, but mostly what you do is sick backflips, and then you hit a monster in the head with a hammer, and then I stab it with a gun lance, and then discharge a worm spike or a worm stake,
my God,
which then explodes.
We had the highest of highs on our stream today. That we mentioned it on the stream, but for there are a lot more people listening to this podcast than listen to or than watch that stream. If you're I think you've seen it. Like Austin and I were both curious about this series, but
for
like
years,
not necessarily
for years. We've both
and,
been
and,
like
we should. This seems like the kind of game, given that we like dark. Like people always describe it as Dark Souls with dinosaurs, and I just like ah. Like, I just couldn't get over the hump with previous entries, or would get scared off when I would flirt with them. And I have definitely gotten over that hump. And I think if you want to see two people who came into this with, like, you know, not sure if it was going to click for them, we experienced the kind of fight that both brings in the stuff that's unique to Monster Hunter World, just like the systemic interactions between creatures in a big
and the environment
space.
Huge like cool, I don't even spoil stuff, but like
yeah,
there's some cool moments where the environment changes. There's a moment that's like the Duel of the Fates from Phantom Menace where we're separated
Move,
from
Austin!
Each other,
you gotta run,
and it's like you're on one side of this obstacle with a dragon and I'm on the other side, and there's nothing I can do to get to you until it clears up. It's really cool.
I like this game a lot.
But to go back to Rob's original question, and I also like this game a whole lot, which is, like, are they monsters? there, at the same time, I want to reserve the right to say that there is a difference between the big iguana that you fight in the very, very, very beginning of the game and the
Diablos.
And Diablos, or even just like the weird corpse dog that lives in the death pit.
I felt no sympathy when I slaughtered that thing.
That thing is terrifying. And the thing that I like about this thing, or the thing that this opens up on the question side, is that like, there is no difference between the big iguana thing and the corpse dog. The corpse dog isn't malevolent. It just looks malevolent. It's just rendered in such a way that it, like, its aesthetic is like, I think I described this in the review as being like, what if a tumor was a small subway car, or if a dog was made out of the meat of a flexing bicep or something like that. It's gross, and there's a moment where it puts down its claws, and it has six claws, and then it splits them and there are four more claws. And so it goes from having, you know, it goes from having basically 20 claws to having 40 in a second. And I'm like, fuck this thing. This thing sucks. And it moves with just like incredible speed, and leaps at you in these weird angles, almost like it leaps at you like you're doing fly fishing. Like it's a fly fishing line just coming at you in these crazy curves.
It jumps up on the wall and bounces off.
It's wild. And so like, but that's not a different thing than the big iguana you kill at the beginning of the game. But because it's built in such a way that preys on your predispositions about what monsters look like, it does feel like a monster. Also, it just puts you in danger. Like, you don't feel like you're in control of that fight. It's brilliant. Like, I think some of the monster design is really, really, really some of the coolest I've seen. Some of the most interesting and effective I've seen. And like, whatever reservations I have about the game, which I do have about like everything from some of its weird colonialism to the bad matchmaking,
you want to experience the high highs and the low lows. Watch us trying to figure out what should be the most basic thing in the world in a game that is built around playing with other people. Like, it is a game that you can solo to some degree, but then there will be a point where the game, you either have to break from the game or you need to start playing with other people to continue like climbing the mountain, and we hit that. The fact that we just couldn't easily join each other's game, and it took us about 20 minutes to figure out what the fuck to do, including contradictory information from the chat, because people in the chat were confused on like what you could and couldn't do.
Especially if you're doing a story mission, and have you seen so like, Rob, there's a thing in this game where if you're doing a story mission, you can totally play that story mission together, but only after each player has already seen the cutscenes in that story mission. And that doesn't make any sense.
So you can't actually play through the game with a buddy.
You can get to the cutscene, then quit the mission, then restart the mission, and invite your buddy in. And that's just like... Especially because the cutscenes come when you like find the monster. So you can't just like start the mission, quit out. You have to start the mission, track the monster down, find it, let the cutscene play, back out, invite your friend in, start over again, retrack the monster, and then fight it. And so like, just make that simpler, Capcom. Please figure out a way to streamline that. You've made so much of the rest of the game so much more, maybe not accessible. Accessible is the wrong word. It's not accessible.
But it's the on-ramp is easier than before. Like, it's not a game that like compromises what it is in pursuit of making it easier for more people to get into it. I think it speaks to the fact that both you and I have that, like, If you've been a Monster Hunter curious, like, this is the game that you could scale and at least come to terms with whether you actually would like it or not.
This game has made me think a lot about this notion of approachability or you know, accessibility in the sense of onboarding and on-ramping, because it didn't necessarily make those things simpler. It does a bad job of teaching you the weapons. It doesn't do a job at all of actually of teaching the 14 different weapons.
It just says, here's 14. I guess go to a tutorial section that's optional if you'd like to check that out.
Shows you some combo chains.
You should probably check out this YouTube video in which somebody compares the weapons in this game to other weapons in video games. Maybe that will actually tell you what you're supposed to do and which weapon you should use. The hammer's pretty good.
But what it does do is like, it gives you handholds of a different sort, which are like, wow, did you see that dragon throw that T-Rex off the top of this tree? And, like, it keeps you there through the hard climb up the mountain, not by giving you, like, not by lightening your load, you know, not by making the mountain easier to climb. So maybe even handholds is the wrong metaphor, but it keeps letting you see what the peak looks like. You know what I mean? It keeps letting you say, like, yo, when you get up here, you're going to be doing this cool shit all the time. Check out this cool monster that spits poison from its tail. Check out this cool monster that, like, is a weird flying electric squirrel that screeches. And, like, all that stuff is so much encouragement to push through the difficulty in a way that when I've touched past Monster Hunter games, there's stuff there that's cool. Like, I'm not saying that this was a bad series until now or something, but it was never enough for me to get over the hill and like, actually internalize a weapon to the point that I loved it. And that I wanted to start experimenting with new weapons, and that I would hit the quote-unquote high-rank quests. Whereas here, they really stick that landing. And that is, like, enough, I think, to really lean into it. And again, like, I actually, like I said in the review, I actually think that, like, some of the thematic and political stuff actually fucking sucks. And I would be remiss to not say that. Like, I think that the... It falls so. I don't think it's malicious. I don't think this is like a game where Japanese devs are like, and we're going to make a game about Western colonialism. You know, we're in favor of it or something. I think this is just bad missteps, and I think that can be enough to put some people off. And it's worth thinking about that stuff. I think that there's like, I had a quest the other day, or not even a quest. It's one of those things that's like, oh, this should be really cool, but there's some baggage here that these devs probably did not think about at all, in which there are these, like, native cat people. Either they're native or they showed up with a previous fleet, and now they're like, native tribes or something. I don't know what the full story is there. But they are, like, the cat people who are out in the world. And most of the time when you see one... If you see one, they can join up with you, and they can become a hunter with you, which is like, oh, cool. If you see them in certain maps, they're like, get the fuck out of here. And they will, like, put you to sleep in the middle of your monster fight with, like, poison darts and stuff like that. And they'll fight you, like, to get you away from their territory. That's what I'm referencing in that review when I talk about literally fighting, needing to kill native people to, like, do your hunt. It's like, hey, gotta kill these cat people so that I can fight my dragon, because they're bothering me while I'm fighting my dragon. But then I hit this quest, or this, like, open world quest sort of, the other day, where my cat ran into another cat who was, like, from one of these tribes, and my cat was like, oh, by the way, Rob, you have a hunting cat in this game, and also when I say cat, I mean they're people, they're cat people, they're little cat people.
Okay, are the cat people like shapeshifters, or cat people like the chicks in Escaflowne?
Neither. They're little cats who stand on their hind legs and wear armor and have swords, and they're incredibly cute.
Whoa, wait, what are you talking about, like, fucking house cats?
Yeah, I'm talking about, like,
go to war?
I'm talking about house cats what go to war. I'm talking about Martin. I'm talking about Redwall. I'm talking about that real furry shit.
Yeah.
That classic shit. That's what I'm talking about. And they're cats, and they put on armor, and they fight. And so my cat was like, oh, we're going to chase this one down. And you, like, chase it through its like, habitat, through the ancient forest, and you climb a bunch of vines, and it's like, yo, stay away from me. And you're chasing it, and it's like, yelling at you in broken language, because it's just like, nya, leave me alone, or whatever. And your cat is like, but we're going to be friends. And you eventually chase it back to its HQ, its, like, little camp, and they do, like, a little back and forth, and your cat is just like, hey, we're not bad. We're just from the camp nearby. We're friends. And then it goes like, oh, well, now you can be part of our tribe. And then it's done. And it's one of those things that's like, oh, this, y'all had, like, an idea on a whiteboard somewhere. And, like, it resulted in this, where now my cat is part of this thing's tribe because they talked once. And now it can use this new piece of, this new gadget that it got. And that is a real pregnant sequence if, inside of a certain history. And I'm not saying you can't have tribes in your games or whatever, but, like, y'all are walking on some eggshells right now in a way that maybe was not thought through all of the way, especially given that the game literally opens with, like, oh, you're going to the quote-unquote new world. And, like, that stuff is it's a bummer because, again, I had the way I wrote about it in my review is, like, every time it happens, it's a speed bump in what otherwise has been just, like, a game that has had me totally, completely in love with it. And who knows, I'm 35 hours in or something now. There is still some story stuff to do, and there's a chance that this all turns around and it does turn into you were the real monsters all along. But then my guess is after that cutscene plays, you go back to camp and you turn whoever told you that you were a monster into a cool shield. So we'll see. We'll see. We should take a quick break and come back and talk more about monsters in the form of zombies, probably. Because I hear there are a billion of them, Rob. Is that true? A billion?
That might be slightly exaggerated.
Okay, we'll take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
That's the music.
People are going to hear this because none of this is going to work.
We'll see. We'll see. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work, and then that won't be on us this time. Like normally, where we just forget to take a break. All right, we are back. Rob, while Patrick and I have been playing Monster Hunter, you have been
roasting
playing...
meat. Well done, steak.
Well done. Well done, steak.
Just a regular steak, not good enough. Well done. Throw
gotta
it out.
Gotta get. Yeah. You know what? I don't like a well done steak anymore. I grew up on well done steak.
No. This we're talking about Monster Hunter.
Okay. I want to make sure
medium rare, please.
Yes. Exactly. Rob, you've been playing They Are Billions still. You and I actually played a little bit of that. How's that been going?
It's been going pretty well. I am bad at the billion stage.
Wait, what's the billion stage? Is that the final, like, the end
game? It's the final push.
So what does that stage look like? I guess, like, mechanical spoilers for They Are Billions here.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about this. It's very classic RTS, right down to the map is randomized, so a big part of it is, like, exploring the map and figuring out what your defensible borders are, how to get the most resources possible within your perimeter without compromising your defensibility, as it were.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the game, at some point, like very near the date you need to hold out until, at which point the game will end, you get the message that there's a massive horde coming and they are billions.
Does that show up on the screen? Is that what happens, basically?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like every time there's a swarm coming, you get an alert. This one, you get instead of 8 hours warning, you get 24 hours warning. So the amounts like maybe 2 minutes of game time to make final prep, and then the map reveals, and you see just rivers of like red pouring across the mini map toward your base. And every like red pixel, it represents one zombie. It just like blots out the screen.
Oh wow!
And they start hitting everywhere. And the thing is, they follow kind of like almost fluid dynamics, where like they will sort of toward an obstacle. They'll hit it,
right?
But if a backup starts, zombies will start to veer away and into a different channel.
Okay, so like a big part of this game ended up being, so while we were playing it, we streamed it last week. I think that archive is up now on YouTube. If it isn't, it should be by tomorrow, probably. A big thing that you were kind of emphasizing as my They Are Billions tutor was like, think about how the natural environment will, one, provide kind of borders for the town you're defending, but also how it will direct the big hordes of zombies as they kind of flow in, and how they can actually, how the kind of natural breaks can actually screw up your prediction about where they show up. So like, if you just imagine a square map and a mountain range that is to the southwest, like exactly at like, you know, let's say 7 or 8 o'clock, you know, on a clock, basically. You don't necessarily know if the zombie horde hits that mountain range, are they going to flip over to the kind of left side and go north, or if they're going to come kind of around the other side and come up from your south, basically, or kind of like from your west or your south. And I can imagine as the numbers get bigger and bigger, the answer is they come from both.
They come literally everywhere. That's the thing. Like you will see them pouring in from every direction all at once. And that's the other thing. Like every other wave usually hits along one half of your base, at least.
Right.
And you can at least figure out that, like, okay, out of these three positions that cover an arc from the, you know, north through the west down to the south, of those positions, I can reinforce those and strip everything off the east. I can rush right. toward where the action's going to be. In this final stage, everything's going to hit all at once, which means you can't actually deploy to fend it off.
Right, you can't say, all right, my entire eastern front shift to my west or my south so that you can defend there. You then have to actually reinforce those positions and just, like, hope you have enough.
Yeah. And you probably don't. I certainly don't. I've come really close, like painfully close.
Oh.
Like I have been within a few ticks of the clock. Like if I could have lasted, probably another like minute, 30 seconds.
Jesus,
I would have had it, but my colony fell before that could happen.
So here's a question: are you still able to do the kind of micro tricks completely fall apart at that stage?
Not really, but it a little bit. So you can become sort of a god tier micro player in this game, but you can always pause.
Right.
You can basically play the final stages as like a turn based or like pausable continuous time strategy game.
Right. I guess for clarity, for what I mean when I say micro play is like in. Do you want to talk about your? You know way more about RTSs than me, right?
Yeah. So you can like. So yeah, like. A thing you can do, and this is something you'll probably have to pick up at their billions, you can send a squad out onto the map and have them take a pot shot or five at an incoming horde. That will pull aggro from that horde, and a bunch of them will come streaming after you. And if you stay there a little while longer, more of that horde will channel toward your guys, and then you can sort of like kite them toward where your defenses are actually best. And away from maybe a softer part of your line. You can totally do that. But it does get kind of impossible in the final stage, in the billion stage. The problem is there's really no space to get out to. There's nowhere you can kite around. And I'm really sort of... The thing I'm running into, and this is what's kind of cool about this game, is... You have to be thinking about, are you going to stake everything on holding that outer perimeter? Or right. are you willing in that final stage to shit can huge parts of your base and defend to an even stronger position?
Well, because part of the mechanic is, and like this is a pretty good reflection of one of the ways in which zombies are used thematically, is that zombies are a corrupting force. If one gets in, it can totally turn your base against itself, because all of your buildings have a certain threshold. They have like a destruction threshold, but they also have a corruption threshold.
Yes.
And so if they get damaged a certain amount by the zombies, they will become little mini zombie factories, almost like in Gauntlet, you would have those little monster factories. Shout outs to Monster Factory. They would have like those little like monster generators basically in Gauntlet where all the enemies would pour out of. And all of your buildings, maybe not all of them, but all of your like your crude buildings, anybody where a person, any building where there's a worker there can become a factory for zombies basically. And so you end up being in these situations where it's like, this happened while we were streaming it last week, where it was like, oh, is it just better to burn this all fucking down? And, like, try to rebuild it afterwards and pull all of those people away. And because the alternative to keeping this, trying to keep this little district we've set up alive is that the zombies will get reinforced here. And so you end up having to make those really hard choices about that. And also they're very vain choices because, I mean, as you told me while we were playing, it was like, oh, this game is also a city builder. It's also about building an efficient and frankly, like... well laid out city, both in terms of like lines for your soldiers to run through and making sure that they can get from the eastern wall to the western wall, but also just in terms of like, I want it to look kind of good, you know? Yes, it's good that the farm, that we made room for the farms, but I also want the farm district to look cool. And so there's a bit of me, maybe it's also because we started calling them things like the Zachney Quarter and the Walker District that didn't help, but like, I wanted that stuff to be there and like for it to stick around and stay, and I had to burn it down because otherwise I would never be able to build anything again. And that's really an interesting thing in an RTS. I've never played an RTS that has something like that in it in that way. But that's also just shows my lack of RTS, you know, playing experience, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, but even by those standards, I think this one does goes pretty far down the city layout route. I think two big things is there are two buildings, the market and the bank. Uh-huh. That the market reduces how much food your dwellings consume. So, like, each farm will go a lot farther if you've got a market that has, an area of effect on these buildings, and so they eat less food, which means you can build more housing. Uh-huh. Banks make each dwelling more more productive on the gold front. But that encourages you to build these really densely populated, like, downtowns where, like, all the residential housing is clustered. Problem is, infection spreads like wildfire through, like, residential zones. Like, an industrial building's huge, but, like, it doesn't spawn that many zombies relative to its size, right?
Right, right.
But, like, a zombie gets into one house in a dense residential area where there's, like, 40 or 50 dwellings.
Mm-hmm.
You are fucked. It's right. over. Like, that is, you are going to watch just a cascade roll through your town. And
that's it.
Yeah. And that will happen, like, in seconds. Like, it's one of the worst things, is you will have your field troops, the ones not, like, on the walls, you will have them rushing toward that one, like, house that was vulnerable, and you'll get there just in time to see it, like,
all fall apart. Yeah.
Yeah, and then it becomes overwhelming. Yeah, it's really quite cool. It's a lot of fun tinkering with those defenses and sort of, like, in the previous waves, you've seen how they tend to hit an area of your defenses, like what routes they tend to follow.
Right.
And so by the time you've hit the billion stage, you should have anticipated that, like, okay, well, actually, they don't hit this line squarely. They actually hit it at a weird angle, which means that corner has become the critical point of the entire line, right? Like, you're blocking off a huge section of the map, but actually, the entire defense hinges on, like, four tiles, basically, that you have to keep the zombies off of.
Right, which ends up being, like, a kind of a cool thing in terms of where you are deciding to put your focus, and figuring out what those tiles are, right? Because you're also trying to figure out, so much of that game is just like, how do I build the best machine that is also a town, you know?
Yeah.
And sometimes that means, like, ah, fuck, I really want to use this perfect green prairie for farmland or hunting land to get food, but what I really need right now is more electricity. I got to build a mill here or something like that. And so, like, that stuff ends up overlapping with those concerns about defense, and then also the concerns about whether or not what you're building is a group of structures that together could turn into a huge catastrophe for you. It's neat. I really like it. I want to get back to that stream that we did and maybe finish off that one game at the very least.
I don't think that'll take long.
Listen, maybe it'll be the one. We'll be the ones.
I can't believe we held that.
I know. It was bad. I mean, that's my one, I'd say, one downside right now. It's like, I didn't think we would win that fight. I'm confident we will not win the next one. And so now it feels like we're going to play for 20 more minutes to lose. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's a weird... That's why in multiplayer games you go GG and that's it, I'm out. Like, good game, I'm done. Because I can see that I've lost already. Like, you know, in Hearthstone or Magic the Gathering terminology, the zombies have lethal, right? Like, they're going to get me on their next go around. I don't know that I can build something that will keep them away. Or I'll get lucky and I'll win because of luck, and that's what happened last time.
Well,
so
there are some, and this is the fun thing is, like, okay, so a little bit of context for why I think this fantasy is so compelling. Setting aside the sort of tropes of, like, zombie. Well, actually, even Romero was often using, like, zombies as sort of an expression, a knowing expression,
mm-hmm.
of, like, 1970s, like, urban anxiety.
Right.
In a lot of ways. And, like, some of the dynamics behind like white flight,
yep.
For instance, reflected in zombie movies in a way that was like knowing and very critical, which is why I think a lot of those movies hold up in a way that a lot of later zombie fiction doesn't, because later zombie fiction literally just thinks, what if you could just like murder everyone in the city and it was awesome.
And it was cool as hell, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
But the other part of this is the thing about like people fighting a war is that they generally won't just walk into a meat grinder. Like, with the exception of a very few, like, you know, you have to land on Omaha Beach. That's the only way into France, so people do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a bloodbath. But for the most part, like, your great fortifications, your epic citadels of history, rarely see any action. Their very existence is meant to ensure that, like, nobody fucking attacks,
right?
They go somewhere else. It's sort of the nuke of the... you know, of the medieval and early modern age. But damn it, sometimes we want to see people run into the meat grinder. We want to design elaborate murderous mousetraps and then just feed an ever, like, you know, an ever-flowing tide into it. And that's what They Are Billions is kind of letting you do. You're playing an RTS against an enemy that will oblige you and walk predictably into your defenses every time. Now, the question is, can you build the defenses, right, like, beautifully enough and perfectly enough to kill them fast enough before they breach? In the late game, and this is why I have some hope for our continuation, Austin.
Uh-huh.
We're real close to a couple technologies,
okay,
that will really give us a fighting chance.
I mean, even those,
the first,
like,
is the shock tower.
Okay, I was going to say, even, like, the one piece of, like, autonomous, like, ranged super ballista or whatever it was called, that just, like, an automatic machine gun of arrows, seemed to be a huge change in how defenses worked, which was great.
Yeah, because those will target the special infected, and veteran snipers will also just mow down your dangerous infected. But the thing that really helps you, like, stem the tide of like zombies coming in is the shock tower, which has like a 5-second charge up. But then it unleashes, like, a massive, like, zap of electricity.
Gotcha.
That basically fries everything in an arc. And you will see the zombie wave just get, like, incinerated up to a point of the edge of the radius, basically.
Wow.
And then they come flooding back in.
Right.
But in 5 seconds, it's going to happen again. So
we just need,
critical,
like, 12 of those and we'll be fine.
Yeah. And, well, then you can also get the executor turret, which is just... What if we made a Gatling gun that shot, like, 16-inch artillery pieces, like,
sure,
artillery shells?
Yep, good.
And it's fucking awesome. Like, it's incredible. So, I think we have a chance, and even if we don't,
we'll
it is a lot of fun
there,
watching those things just, yeah,
yeah,
just shred, yeah, waves.
I'm excited. So we'll try to get back to that maybe this week. That would be great. All right, we should go into the question bucket with the time that we have left. As always, if you have a question, you can send it in to gaming@vice.com. This one comes in from a person whose name I've hidden by mistake. Let me go backwards and find it. Here it is. It came in from Mike. Mike says, as I was listening to Austin's review of Monster Hunter World, I was struck by his description of feeling sympathy and pity for the monsters he was slaying. It led me to remember a moment I had a few years ago. It was during one of those long high school summers where I'd spend day after day repetitively playing the same games without thought of anything else. I was zoned out on the couch listening to a podcast and playing Left 4 Dead 2. If I remember correctly, I was attempting to get an achievement for beating a certain mission using only a machete. As I was standing in a corner slicing away at these human bodies with human faces filling my screen, I started to feel disgusted with myself. Maybe it was due to the repetitive nature of the machete swinging action or my disconnection from the game due to half playing, half listening, but whatever it was, this new perspective made me seriously question what the hell I was doing. There I was, a semi-respectable teen, staunchly anti-violent, sitting here in my PJs hacking away at digital people. It felt wrong, almost immoral. A while later, I was having a conversation with my dad in which he referred to Red Dead Redemption as, quote, that hunting game you play. I was repelled by this description. My first thought was, but it's so much more than that, which it is, of course. I was uncomfortable with my dad's idea of me being someone who would find enjoyment in even the virtual act of hunting animals for fun. But I can't deny the fact that I spent hours and hours of that game shooting at defenseless and sometimes defenseful animals for fun. It felt odd that there was such a disconnect between my actions in-game and my actual values. At this point, I feel At this point, I find it hard to feel comfortable playing violent games. When playing Breath of the Wild, I had to constantly create this narrative in my head, equating the Bokoblins to ancient ideas of fiends or demons, beings with no capability for anything but evil and mischief. This is bizarre and kind of stupid, but I found it hard to let myself connect with the game otherwise. For the most part, to avoid these mental gymnastics, I tend to stick with nonviolent games. Have any of you had experiences where different perspective, either within yourself or coming from someone else, made you question the morality of the acts you commit in a video game? Morality in quotes there. Does it ever make you uncomfortable? Obviously, I don't think that the creation or playing of violent video games are actually immoral or wrong. But they don't sit well with me when I think of how much they conflict with my beliefs and how I choose to carry myself in the real world. Thanks for the podcast, and feel free to cut as much of this email as you'd like, because it's definitely too long, Mike. I mean, I think we've talked about this a lot already today, right?
Yeah. Slap that question at the beginning of the podcast.
Yeah, totally. But I think there's a broader thing there, too, because, I don't know, I've spoken about this with tons of games, right? And I spoke about this on Twitter this weekend, too, which is to say that, like, I made a series of tweets that basically said, there are lots of people who are upset at my Monster Hunter review because it mentioned this part that I think compromises it. It's political, themes and kind of it's probably unintentional kind of use of kind of this colonialist fantasy. And part of what the critics of that piece say is like, oh, you're saying not to play the game because of this. And like, that's not what I'm saying. And in fact, have spent my whole life playing things that I think are compromised politically, that like are racist or are homophobic or are, you know, are neoliberal or whatever, and finding joy from
no not that
things. Listen, that's 99% of things, right?
I was like you're kind of lumping that into there's a couple piles there.
Those things overlap very clearly is what I'll say. Uh-huh. Those things overlap in the ways that are like absolutely about the reduction of race and sexual identity into capitalist values, and like the only way you're allowed to be black or gay is if you can fucking commercialize it, or black or queer is really what I mean there. The thing that I'll say is that the thing that I ended up saying was like I actually play and watch and read lots of things that I have issues with and find joy in them anyway. And so that ends up being this very difficult thing, but also I do my best to recognize my privilege in moments when I'm not needing to check that, and play despite my concerns. I actually spent a long time being the sort of person who was like, oh, I don't mind about hunting in games, like no big deal at all. And at some point it did start to get to me. But for a long time I was just like, oh, that's totally fine. It doesn't bug me because I don't have, actually important feelings about this one way or the other. And now that I do, I definitely have this feeling of guilt, but like playing a game that is filled with racist caricature, like I often have to find my own joy in there anyway. But like I said in the review, I also wouldn't hold it against anybody who is like, no, I can't do this,
I think what people need to recognize or remember is like understanding like the problems you have with something and then deciding I'm just generally going to put that aside. But I want there's importance in recognizing the problems, acknowledging they exist, and then saying to yourself, despite that, I'm going to continue enjoying this thing because I get why out of it. And like it can exist at the same time. Like they're not mutually exclusive. Right. Like we can talk about the problems with like Monster Hunter's politics and also go, the mechanics are unbelievably good. It is tremendously fun to play. And I don't necessarily think about the politics on a minute to minute basis, but at times I'm reminded of them. It kind of bums me out. I wish it approached it differently. And yet I'm still going to do that spinning barrel roll off of a fucking cliff and slam down on that monster's face.
Right.
And like, that's fine. That's okay. Well, then, that's the reality of the world. And it's a worse thing to pretend that stuff doesn't exist than to acknowledge it does exist and just
try to find some pleasure anyway.
It's compartmentalizing, but doing so in a way that recognizes is why you're pulling a thing apart and looking at it from different ways. And that doesn't necessarily mean you're doing it a disservice. You're just understanding it for what it is.
There was a piece about Monster Hunter by Bob Mackie from when written for US Gamer a few years ago about how, you know, Bob Mackie is a vegetarian or pescatarian or whatever. I believe in the piece he's like starts to qualify, and then he's like, it's not even worth getting into. But he's a vegetarian who hated the series at first because the reason he's a vegetarian is because he doesn't like causing harm to animals, but ended up being able to compartmentalize that and enjoy the game for what it was, separate from his personal beliefs. That said, I also think I want to say that Mike's solution, which is like, oh, there's lots of games in which I don't have to kill anything, actually, they're all dope, like, is also a viable solution here. Like, I don't want to condemn someone like Mike who's like, oh, I'm really uncomfortable with this, so I'm not going to do it, with by saying like, no, just get over it, like, don't be too sensitive or whatever. Like, no, if it really hits you that way, bounce off and like, go find something else. There is lots of other stuff there. But also, if you are compartmentalizing, that means like there are two types of compartmentalization, right? There's a kind that happens automatically in which you just say like, no, it's just a game, I'm not going to engage with this, fuck off. Like, if you say anything about this, you suck, bye. Or there's the version that's like, yeah, there are some fucking issues here that I'm not comfortable with. I will strive to find media that does engage with it in a way that I'm interested in, and also will continue to engage with this thoughtfully and critically in a way that I can get the enjoyment I want from it without kind of being a passive participant who lets it wash over me and like kind of seduces me into not thinking about that stuff. Maybe not like in a broader sense, but even when I'm just playing this game. And I don't think that takes away from my joy I'm still enjoying Monster Hunter World. Like I said, those are speed bumps. They're not like complete off ramps.
I mean, at this point, like I also take pleasure, like part of like what I take pleasure in is critique, right? Like I enjoy, like I like to know what fantasies or dreams or worldviews a piece of media is servicing,
right?
And the ways in which it is servicing them. I like seeing both how you know, that intent is represented, and then maybe also the ways that it like unintentionally betrays itself or reveals you know, a counter argument within itself. Like whatever Monster Hunter World is trying to do, whatever the intent was, the way the animals were animated and rendered and brought to life also made them objects of sympathy and reflection.
Right.
And right. Whether or not that was meant to happen, somewhere within Monster Hunter, it is contradicting itself and making you question whether or not this is something you really want to be doing, whether or not this is a fantasy you should have. And it is healthy and great to be able to ask those questions and sort of contextualize your entertainment in those broader conversations. And the more you know, the greater your context. And yeah, sometimes the more judicious you'll have to be, but also the richer a lot of your enjoyment will be.
Totally.
What I do not like is there's a way of reacting to this sort of broader awareness that is very much like lock the door, like pull down the shades, turn out the lights, and pretend no one's home.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always felt like a lot of that is because on some level, there's an acknowledgement that the argument cannot be won. That, in fact, those problematic elements, 100%, they are there. You aren't imagining it. It exists. It is within the text of the game. But rather than confront that and admit like one's own complicity with it and one's own comfort with those narratives, one simply tries to pretend they're not there at all and fuck you for pointing it out.
Right.
And at that point, you are now just doing someone else's dirty work. You know what I mean? Like, for the sake of for your entertainment, for the sake of your own comfortable complacency, you are now carrying water for capitalist or colonialist enterprise.
Right. Well, like, there was another question that came in that I'm not going to read word for word here, but it came in from Omar, who basically said, like, how do you deal with when you see a thing in this space that no one else is responding to in this way? And referenced, you know, Ugandan Knuckles is a big one, because that's been everywhere over the last week, which is a meme that's kind of spread through the kind of rise of this game called VR Chat. Patrick, do you remember the name of that game?
Yeah.
It's VR Chat. And has, like, been seen at, like, esports events. And then over the weekend, Razer, the hardware company, retweeted a piece of art, a fan art, that included this like, absolutely racist meme. And if you're going to tweet at me and say, "What? How is it racist?" It's because the joke is, it's a black guy's funny. That black guy voice is funny, is the joke that is there that people are laughing at. And that is the depth of the entire joke.
Well, and the implication that an African version of anything
yes.
is somehow less than an off-brand and 100%. Fucked up and shitty in a way. And it's like, and of course it's Knuckles, right?
And
like
of course it's Knuckles, who is yeah. a character who has this heritage or has this history of being like tribal or tribal adjacent. Shout outs to people on the internet who think adjacent is the new SJW word. Extremely funny.
If you are interested in learning more about, because like we're not going to get into it here, but the actual like long history of that meme and its various, the way it got to where it is now, go listen to, I think it's the most recent episode of Reply All, in which they do a really good job of explaining like how it went from like actually innocent and funny and like supporting a really cool thing from like a budget filmmaker in a different part of the world to...
To the thing it is now.
Blatantly twisted racist thing that it is now. And I think often when you see that stuff, like, people are taken aback by when, like, there may be people who are participating in that meme, and I bet it's a lot of them, who don't understand what they're doing is racist. But then when it is pointed out that what you are doing is racist or has racist implications, the response to that is not to say, "Fuck you, like, I didn't know." It's like, say, oh shit, that's bad. Yeah. I'm glad I understand that now. Like, but people don't want their joke taken away, right?
Well,
and that sort of like clinging to the idea that this is harmless entertainment, your identity gets bound up with it. It's not a long walk there from there to like, okay, you are now actively invested in taking the side of. The exploiter rather than the exploited,
right?
The owner rather than the employees.
Well, and then this is like the larger dilemma too, because I mean, this is what you're speaking about, Rob. Is like, where's the point at which silence is complicity, and in which by not, you know, I don't think by Mike deciding that Mike is going to not play Red Dead Redemption's hunting stuff or something is not going to shift the world's, you know, understanding of, violence against animals or about gun rights or about anything else. Like, I don't think that is not an action that is going to shake the political spectrum, you know, and change things necessarily. But that sort of like defensiveness around it does prevent certain conversations from developing that can, over the course of time, kind of snowball into a shift in what the political paradigm is. And at the same time, there is difficulty there. Like, there is a great irony I think it would be irresponsible of me to be like, and then that's all we have to say about this, without saying that, like, last week on this podcast, Danielle and I went really hard on a game for its use of a dead name in the story that turned into like a whole bit of controversy on the internet, and we heard lots of criticism, which we listened to very carefully. Some of it came from people who were really shitty, and some of it came from people who were genuinely hurt that we would go so hard after a game that involved a trans creator. The trans creator on that game did not write that sequence or anything like that, but was involved in the creation of the game, did all the music for the game. And we had a dialogue that we published on the site with both the writer of the game and the trans musician who was part of the team. And that sort of emerges from the anxiety around what you're talking about, Rob, which is like, there is an anxiety to, or a desire to, not a thing, it's partially an anxiety, but it's also just like a pure desire to speak up when you see something that's fucked up. And in the case of that game, without that context of who created it, but also just in the text of the work, in which it didn't seem like it was a personal narrative, it didn't seem like you were exploring an individual character's history or something like that. It was just like this kind of brief thing that the landing didn't stick for Danielle or I. There's a sort of like ring the alarm bell response that needs to be, I think, balanced with some context to some degree, at least. And that reflects the degree of harm that could be done. And I think if we made a misstep there, it's there, which is like, billions, or not billions, millions of people are going to play Monster Hunter. And so it's important for me to try to reach those millions of people and say, hey, while you're playing, think about this angle that you maybe did not see, and to go hard on it and to be willing to go hard on it, because lots of people worked on that game and lots of people are in a position where, like, maybe they can shift the story back in the direction of Monster Hunters of past. But that, like, the four-person dev team on Red Strings Club, you know, there is a much smaller risk of harm there in some ways. That's not to say that we shouldn't criticize it. I stand by the writing and I stand by the criticism. I think that, like, that is not necessarily executed well in that game. But at the same time, it's been a really interesting week to go from, like, huge, from small game, from tiny team, makes a mistake that I stand by that evaluation of it, but then go to a game where it's a huge game that offers a lot of things, but also makes a big mistake. And so it's one of the reasons why I felt like I had to write that stuff in the Monster Hunter review, was, like, even though it's, you know, as far as I know, my Native American ancestry is very low. Being an African American often means that your family tree disappears at a certain point, because slavery is a motherfucker. But at the same time, even though that's not necessarily my direct lane, so to speak, I know what I saw in that game. I saw this sort of, like, very empty calorie version of a New World colonialist fantasy that had no intention about it. It's not like pro Manifest Destiny in the sense of, like, there's a call to action or anything, but it does use those that rhetoric and those symbols in a way that's really uncomfortable. And so, like, I know we have to talk about that stuff, and it's about finding the way to both do it where we're making sure we're not falling into the kind of water carrying problem that you just outlined, Rob, while also making sure that we are recognizing the agency and players to engage with that stuff at various levels, as you kind of outlined, Patrick, and also the context that they emerge from, so that response is, like, equitable and powerful, and hopefully powerful enough to move things a little bit. That is my attempt to reconcile this conversation with the past conversation, because I wanted to make sure that those two things are aligned, you know. Apologies for that 7-minute rant.
Yeah, it was a real rant. You really peeled the paint off the walls there.
Welcome to Angry Austin on YouTube. This is my new thing. I'm angry all the time, but mostly angry at a lack of nuance that even I can slip into sometimes. Follow me. Like and subscribe.
Or don't.
Or don't. And then I have a new
but do,
thing
but
to
actually
but
do
please
it.
Do it, because engagement is how I make money. I think that's going to do it for us. I think that we are pretty much out of time on that one. Where can people find you on the internet, Patrick?
Find me at Patrick Klubik.
How about you, Rob?
At Rob Zachney.
Shout-outs to Bowen for letting us use his track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. You find out more info about that at waypoint.zone. You can find me, waypoint.zone/BOEN. You can find me at Austin_Walker on Twitter. You can follow Waypoint on Twitter at twitter.com/waypoint, over on Facebook at facebook.com/waypointvice. Watch all the archives of the videos we've been talking about at youtube.com/waypointvice or at twitch.tv/waypoint. And read all the stories we write, like the review for Monster Hunter that was also in this feed, actually, over at waypoint.vice.com. That is going to do it for us today. We will be back Wednesday for a Waypoint 101 for Zombie U, a.k.a. Zombie. Just as a reminder, we're playing through the Tower of London mission. You will know that you've gotten there when the sequence with the helicopter ends. So send in questions for that by, ideally, by, like, midday tomorrow, by, like, noonish Eastern, one-ish Eastern tomorrow on Tuesday, because we're going to record that tomorrow. And you can send those in also to gaming@vice.com. Use waypoint101 in the header so that we can pull those up. We also have a form thread about this over, if you go to form.waypoint.vice.com or discourse.zone, we have a kind of a pretty active forum of people talking about Zombie U. So you can also go there and drop your questions or comments about the game there, and we'll take a look and kind of talk through some of them and respond to people. I've been talking to some people there. It's been good. So that's going to do it for us. Until then, what's up? Danielle's not here. I was going to throw it to Danielle, but Danielle's not here today. Thanks, Rob.
Here's what we say. Google the Senkabetsu brown bear incident.
What? What? What did you say?
We're talking about monsters. read about this bear attack in early 20th century Japan.
What is it called?
Senkubetsu Brown Bear Incident.
That sounds like my favorite anime ever.
The Wikipedia entry reads like your favorite Senkubetsu anime.
Brown. If you just search for Brown Bear Incident, that'll show up here. Oh, man. Oh, man.
Brown Bear Incident sounds like something that happens in a toilet.
Brown Bear Incident sounds like a noise rock band. All right, that's going to do it for us. Be good and be good at it. Peace.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.